Danielle glanced around. Is this what they call a speakeasy?
Yes.
She guessed there were at least 30 people, some sitting at tables or at the bar, others lingering along the wall, a few standing nearby watching the piano player, and a couple danced at the back of the room. She couldn't hear what they were saying, but they seemed to be enjoying themselves. By their dress, she knew the era was the 1920s. While she expected all the women to be dressed as flappers, with short-fringed dresses, that wasn't the case. A few were, but others were dressed in more stylish clothing of the era. One woman wore a Stone Martin fox stole, with the heads and feet of the poor dead foxes dangling from her shoulders. Danielle cringed. That's disgusting.
What?
Walt looked in the direction of Danielle's stare. Those poor dead animals. Why would anyone want to drape dead foxes around their shoulders? Did they really think that was attractive?
That's Thelma Templeton.
Danielle wrinkled her nose. Oh, yuck. You actually had a thing with her? If Danielle were honest with herself, she would have to admit Thelma was an attractive woman, with short coal-black hair, alabaster skin, and delicate features. Tall and slender, she held a long-stemmed cigarette holder in one hand, and she punctuated the air with its lit cigarette while she chatted with those around her. Yet it was Thelma's gruesome stole Danielle couldn't see past.
I told you there was never anything between me and Thelma Templeton. I just thought it would be easier for me to prove my point if I let you see her.
Screwing up her face into a lopsided frown, Danielle studied the woman. Okay, I admit she is attractive. At least she would be if she got rid of that horrid fox stole. Walt let out a sigh, his gaze still on Thelma.
I suppose you need to listen to her to understand.
Danielle shook her head. No, no, I don't want to listen to her. I've no desire to listen to anyone who would wear something like that.
Walt chuckled. Danielle, not to sound, as Lily calls it, sexist, but Thelma Templeton is dumb as a stump.
Danielle turned to Walt. I suppose that explains her fashion accessory. But since when did men care about a mistress's intelligence?
Walt glared at Danielle. That is insulting. I expected better of you.
Danielle let out a sigh. I'm sorry. I guess you're right. So tell me about Thelma.
For one thing, she flirts entirely too much for a married woman. See those two men she's talking with?
Yes, they don't seem to have a problem with her intelligence, considering the way they're drooling all over her.
She isn't married to either of them.
Walt pointed to a man sitting at the bar.
That's Howard Templeton.
Danielle looked to the bar. The man Walt pointed to was busy talking to the bartender while he sipped his drink. If he was concerned over his wife's flirtatious behavior, he didn't show it.
"Explain something to me," Danielle asked.
"What's that?"
"Obviously, this is a dream hop. I'm not coming up with all this myself. You're doing it."
So, is this place like a speakeasy you used to go to back when you were alive? Did Thelma really wear that disgusting stole, or was that something you added?
Walt leaned back against the wall and smiled at Danielle.
I would have thought you already knew. Remember what you told me about Harvey's dream hop when you were trapped at Presley House?
With a shudder, Danielle said, I don't want to talk about snakes.
I'm not talking about that dream hop. Or dream nightmare Harvey put you through. I'm talking about when Harvey showed you, in a dream, how he was killed. And later, he took you to the beach to show you how they got rid of his body. And then you went to the cemetery.
What are you saying? Danielle asked.
Some dream hops are nothing more than visits with a spirit that create an environment from the imagination, either mine or yours.
Like when we go sailing or when you took me to Hawaii?
Exactly. Other dream hops, such as this one or the ones I just mentioned that Harvey took you on, are a little like a movie replaying what occurred in the past.
So you're saying this speakeasy really existed, and all these people were once here, just as they are now, with Thelma flirting with those men and her husband drinking at the bar?
Yes, and if I'm not mistaken, in a couple of minutes I'll be walking through that door.
Walt pointed to the door on the other side of the room.
What?
Danielle looked quickly from Walt to the door. He reached over and offered Danielle a hand.
Let's get off this thing. This piano player keeps hammering away on my feet, and I'd like to turn the sound up so you can hear what's being said.
Danielle flashed Walt a grin as they jumped off the piano. Just as Walt said, the door opened and he walked in. He wasn't alone. Danielle recognized the other man. It was Jack. They walked together to the bar.
This was just a week before the Eva Aphrodite went missing, Walt explained.
If you can do this, couldn't you take us to the boat on the night it went down so we could see what happened?
Walt laughed. That would be a good trick. But no, I was actually here, which is why I'm able to recreate what happened.
You weren't here before you walked in that door just now, Danielle reminded him.
That's true, but if you notice, until I walked in the door with Jack, no one really moved from where they were standing or sitting. I simply created the scene as I remembered it looked when I walked in with Jack.
Drat. I'd love to eavesdrop on Thelma, but I guess that isn't possible.
I assume whatever we hear will be what I heard back then, not what was said out of earshot.
Too bad. We might be able to figure out why her friend thought you two were having an affair.
You believe me now?
Danielle shrugged. Well, the way you are with Sadie, I just don't see you cozying up with some woman wearing dead dogs around her neck. Maybe not dogs exactly, but close enough. Walt chuckled.
You really do hate that stole, don't you?
I really do.
Let's go over and see what Jack and I are talking about, Walt suggested.
Danielle started walking toward the bar when she paused and looked at Walt. Wait a minute. You've never taken me on one of these types of dreams before. How did you know how to do it? That it would work?
After you told me about those dream hops with Harvey, I began wondering if there was more I could do with a dream hop than I imagined. Would it be possible to recreate a scene from my past? And, once there, would everyone do and say what happened back then? At least, what I observed when it originally occurred. So I tested it out.
Tested it? How? On who? When Walt didn't answer, Danielle repeated the question.
Marie. I tried it on Marie.
You took Marie on a dream hop?
I figured she would just assume she was dreaming about her childhood. I slipped into her dream and took her back to when she lived across the street with her parents, when she was just a baby.
And it worked?
Yes. We didn't stay long because she recognized me and began asking me all sorts of questions. It worked, but I cut it short. So I'm assuming she was there in the dream with you, like she is today. A 90-year-old woman with you by her side, and in the room was her other self, her as a baby. And her parents?
Yes.
Interesting. Surprising she never mentioned it. They were about to continue on to the bar when Thelma was suddenly by her side with one of the men she had been talking with. They paused, looking to the bar.
"Is that Walt Marlowe?" Thelma asked.
The man by her side looked over.
"Yeah."
"Howard and I are going out this weekend in his boat."
"Wish I could afford that," the man grumbled.
Thelma laughed.
"We've gone out a number of times. Walt Marlowe's never been out on the boat with us. I suppose he's too busy making moonshine in his basement."
She laughed again and made her way to her husband, while the man she had been talking to walked in the opposite direction. Danielle glanced at Walt, who stared at Thelma with an odd expression.
"Improvising Walt?" Danielle asked.
With a frown, he glanced from Thelma to Danielle.
"I don't understand. I didn't hear that conversation when I was here before. I had no idea what she said back then. Look where I'm sitting at the bar. There's no way I overheard her."
"Do you think that's really what Thelma said back then? Or did you subconsciously improvise her conversation?" Danielle asked. Confused, he stared at Thelma, who leaned against her husband, sipping her drink.
"I have no idea."
23. Jack from the dream stood up, said something to the Walt sitting next to him, and then walked to the piano player. Spirit Walt grabbed hold of Danielle's wrist and said,
"This is what I wanted you to hear."
He pulled her to the bar and stood next to his former self, who sat quietly sipping a drink. Danielle looked from the Walt sitting at the bar to the Walt at her side.
"You know, you really haven't changed much."
"This was only a few years before I died."
A few seats down, Howard stood up and walked away, leaving Thelma alone. Danielle watched as Thelma's gaze followed her husband, who a moment later left the speakeasy from a door on the opposite side of the room from where Walt and Jack had entered. Once the door closed behind Howard, Thelma picked up her glass and scooted down the bar to Walt, standing by his side. Spirit Walt and Danielle silently listened to the exchange.
"Hello, Walt Marlowe?" Thelma asked in a flirtatious tone.
Walt turned to her, a bored expression on his face.
"Yes?"
"I'm Thelma Templeton. We met at Sissy Bancroft's party."
Walt nodded.
"Yes, I know who you are. You're Howard's wife."
Sipping her drink, she let out an exaggerated sigh.
"Howard had to leave. We had some silly appointment."
When Walt didn't respond, she leaned toward him and asked, "Howard and I are going out on your boat this weekend, and I was wondering, will you be on board?" Walt studied her a moment and then took a sip of his drink before saying,
"No, I've got a prior appointment."
Thelma's gaze darted to her right. She spied Jack walking back in their direction. In a rush, she reached out and touched Walt's right hand, which rested on the bar top, still holding his drink. Expressionless, his gaze looked down at her hand on his.
"Maybe sometime you could take me out on it. A private cruise. Just the two of us. We could go now."
Walt jerked his hand from her touch and took a swig of his drink. He then looked Thelma in the eyes.
"The Eva Aphrodite always has a full crew. It will never be just the two of us."
Thelma looked as if she had been slapped. The next moment, Jack reached the bar as Thelma abruptly turned from Walt. Not saying a word to either man, she rushed away, abandoning her drink on the bar top. She retreated to a friendlier section of the speakeasy.
"Wow, you were cold,"
Danielle said with a chuckle. I don't think I've ever seen you look at anyone with that expression of contempt before.
What was that all about?
Jack asked. Leaning an elbow against the bar top, he glanced across the room to where Thelma had landed. She stood alone by the piano player, watching him play.
Dumb Dora at it again, Walt chuckled. It was only a matter of time before she got around to you, Jack snickered. No thanks.
Walt downed the rest of his drink. Jack glanced over to Thelma. He picked up Thelma's forgotten drink. The glass was half full.
I think she forgot something.
Walt turned to Jack and frowned.
You aren't serious.
Jack shrugged and then said with a laugh,
Unlike you, I like them dumb.
Danielle watched Walt's reaction, the Walt sitting at the bar, not the spirit Walt at her side. He didn't seem overly concerned with his friend's intentions and ordered another drink.
So you really didn't know each other very well? Danielle asked.
I knew who she was. Her reputation wasn't a secret in our circles. Sissy Bancroft's party wasn't the first time we'd run into each other. Just the first time we'd exchanged more than 10 words.
Danielle looked across the room to where Jack now stood with Thelma. He had just handed her the drink.
So did they get together? Danielle asked.
Watch,
Walt said with a brief chuckle. Danielle watched, and a moment later, Thelma and Jack walked through the same doorway her husband had gone through not that long ago.
Shouldn't we follow them? See what they're saying? Maybe we'll find a clue to what happened on the Eva Aphrodite. There must be some reason Jack's spirit went to the wreckage.
And you're the one who's always telling me I can't snoop on the guests when they're in their bedrooms, Walt laughed.
Ignoring Walt's comment, Danielle grabbed him by the hand and started dragging him toward the doorway Thelma and Jack had just gone through. Walt went along without protest. When they reached the door, Danielle tried opening it, but her hand went through the doorknob, as when ghosts try, without success, to grab hold of an object.
Just walk through the door. I think that will work, Walt suggested.
Danielle glanced back at Walt, her hand still holding his.
Really?
Walt gave her a nod. With a shrug, Danielle took Walt's suggestion. Together, she and Walt moved effortlessly through the wooden door. Once on the other side, nothing was as Danielle had expected. They were no longer inside, and any sign of the speakeasy had vanished. Instead, they stood in open space, as if walking on clouds.
What happened?
Danielle looked around.
Where did they go? Where's the door we just walked through?
That speakeasy has several entrances. I know the door we just went through leads to another room, and then to the outside. Jack usually enters that way. I never did.
Danielle looked around again. So they're just gone? Walt shrugged.
I'm sorry, Danielle. Like you, I don't know how all this works. This rather proves my original assumption. I can't recreate what once happened unless I was present at the time.
But we heard what Thelma said about you to that man. It was a conversation you'd never heard before.
True, but my former self was sitting just a few feet away. Perhaps that makes a difference.
Did Jack ever tell you what happened between him and Thelma?
Walt shook his head.
I never asked. Frankly, I didn't really care.
I thought Jack was seeing someone. Some woman who lived at a local motel with her aunt and uncle.
Walt shrugged.
He was.
Danielle rolled her eyes. That dog. After breakfast on Sunday morning, Danielle walked her guests out the front door. Hillary Hemingway planned to do some sightseeing. The couple from Portland was staying another night, and they were on their way to the pier. Danielle told them it was an easy walk, but Mrs. Sterling didn't seem inclined to walking. Danielle stood by her front swing and watched them drive off. The Sterlings in their car and Hillary in hers. She was just about to go back into the house when another vehicle pulled up in front of Marlowe House and parked. It was Chief MacDonald. "Morning, Chief," Danielle greeted him. She noticed he wore street clothes, not his uniform, and the car he had been driving was his own, not a squad car.
"Morning, Danielle. I'm glad to catch you outside," the chief said when he reached her.
"Outside? What do you mean?" He glanced up to the attic window.
"I wanted to talk to you without Walt listening in."
"About Walt? You were wrong," she insisted.
"Can we talk?" he asked.
"Sure, but we can go in the house." He shook his head.
"No, I don't want him listening in."
Danielle let out a sigh and then motioned to the porch swing. Together, she and the chief sat down. "You were wrong about Walt. He wasn't having an affair with Thelma. They barely knew each other." Danielle's toe of her right foot lightly pushed against the ground, keeping the swing in gentle motion.
"Danielle, you need to read the diary. I know Walt is your friend, but..."
"Would you hear me out, Chief?"
"Okay, what do you have?"
Danielle went on to tell the chief about her dream hop the previous night. When she was finished, the chief looked at her a moment before commenting.
"That's it? That's why you don't think he was Thelma's lover?"
"They barely knew each other. This all happened just days before the Eva Aphrodite went missing. You weren't there. There's no way those two were having an affair."
"Maybe you weren't there either."
Danielle frowned. "What do you mean?"
"It was a dream, Danielle. What makes you think it was any less make-believe than the other dream hops he's taken you on? It was fantasy."
"My Christmas dream was not just make-believe," she insisted, her expression somber.
"Maybe that one wasn't, but you have to admit this really proves nothing. I can believe it possible for spirits to visit you, like in your Christmas dream. But for Walt to conjure up something that happened in his past, and then it plays back like a recording, even playing back something Walt never heard in his life. No, I don't believe that. He created that dream and everyone that was in it. He wrote the script. It proved nothing."
Danielle pushed her right foot on the ground, stopping the swing. "You're wrong, and I'll prove it."
"I didn't come here to argue with you."
Danielle looked at him, her expression hostile. "Why did you come?"
"We found more skeletons on the ship, but one was different. It was in a trunk."
"Yeah, Stella mentioned that."
"Stella?"
He frowned. "One of our guests. She and her husband were down at the beach watching when your guys were taking a trunk off the boat. They overheard one of your people saying something about finding another body."
"Unlike the others, his skeleton was still intact. He wasn't shot in the head. Looks like they got him in the chest. We found a bullet under his ribcage."
"You were sure it was a man?"
"That was our initial feeling, based on the clothing remnants we found in the trunk. But the coroner confirmed it."
The chief reached into his pocket and pulled out a small plastic bag.
"We're hoping this might help us identify him."
He handed the small transparent bag to Danielle. It contained a man's ring. Holding the baggie in her hand, she stared, speechless.
"It's a Masonic ring," he explained. "We've contacted the local lodge hoping they might be able to help us. No one with those initials was listed on the passenger list."
Still staring at the ring in the bag, she asked, "You mentioned there was some fabric from his clothes. Can you tell me what kind of fabric? Color or anything?"
"Pinstriped fabric. Looked gray, but it might have been blue at one time. There are initials inside the ring that should help."
Clutching the bag in her hand, Danielle said, "J.W.
"Excuse me?"
The initials are J.W. The chief frowned.
How did you know that? There's no way you saw the initials.
Because I've already met the spirit attached to the body you found. It's Jack Winters, Walt's business partner, who disappeared with their money at the same time the Eva Aphrodite went missing. He's the one I saw on the boat, the one I talked to. This is his ring. I saw it on him, the spirit him. Danielle handed the small bag back to the chief.
Did Walt murder his business partner?
Danielle let out a groan. Don't go there, Chief.
Obviously, there is nothing I can do about Walt. I just worry about you and Lily.
Danielle stood up. I'm going to figure this out, and you can stop worrying. 24. Danielle pulled up in front of Marie's house and parked her car. After the chief had left that morning, Danielle had asked herself how she could prove to the chief that he was wrong about last night's dream hop, that Walt hadn't written Thelma's script. Unfortunately, the chief was right. The dream hop could have been entirely of Walt's making. It was impossible to prove otherwise. The only thing she might be able to prove was the possibility of that type of dream hop. One where a spirit replays an unedited version of the past. There was only one way Danielle could prove the possibility. Marie needed to confirm Walt's claim that he had visited her in a dream to test his theory. If Marie recalled the dream he had described, Danielle would use that information to try to convince the chief to see it her way. Danielle knew Walt was telling the truth. Never for a moment did she ever consider the possibility Walt was involved with those people's deaths. As for having an affair with Thelma, she understood that was possible. When married to Lucas, Danielle never imagined for a moment he would have an affair. She had been wrong. However, the visit to the speakeasy convinced her Walt was telling the truth. Perhaps the chief didn't trust Walt. She did. I'm glad you stopped by, Marie told Danielle when she led her into the living room a few minutes later. Danielle had called Marie before coming over, which explained the hot pot of tea sitting on the coffee table, along with two empty teacups and a platter of cookies. Danielle took a seat on the sofa. I wanted to tell you about Emma Jackson. I already heard. Marie picked up the teapot. You did? Marie filled the two cups with tea. She then picked up one with its saucer and handed it to Danielle. Yes, Matthew called me this morning, right after you called. I guess there won't be a funeral. Danielle sipped her tea. Marie sat on a chair facing the sofa, holding her cup of tea, its saucer sitting on her lap. You know, after your open house, Emma and I became rather good friends. We would talk on the phone every day. I guess she went peacefully. Yes. That's how I want to go. Of course, after Adam gets married. Danielle laughed. Then you're going to live forever. You may be right. Marie picked up the platter of cookies and offered one to Danielle. By the way, I met Jolene Carmichael yesterday at the museum. Really? I knew she was back in town. Millie mentioned they were going to try to get her to fill a board vacancy. Well, we didn't exactly hit it off. Danielle nibbled on the cookie. Jolene could be a little opinionated, from what I recall. Danielle went on to tell Marie about yesterday's visit to the museum. When she was finished, Marie set her teacup and saucer on the coffee table while spouting a few tisk-tisk-tisks. I don't blame you for not donating the emerald right now. Ungrateful bunch, if you ask me. To be honest, the rest of them were pretty nice, and I did feel bad about it. But I'm just not sure how I feel about them selling the emerald. Maybe they could have made their case, but I'm not really sure they intended to be upfront with me.
If Jolene hadn't said something, would they have?
I thought you just said they were nice.
Well, they were, just not sure how forthright they were. Marie leaned forward and patted Danielle's hand.
Now perhaps you understand why I avoid getting too involved with that group.
You know, they talked with Lily about having her do some educational programs for the museum with the area schools, but when Lily went down there to talk to them about it, nothing really came of it, aside from the fact they hit her up for a donation.
Marie gave Danielle a knowing nod. It's that settlement Lily got from Stoddard's estate. Impossible to keep things like that secret in this little town.
Then I suppose I did the right thing. I'll loan the emerald to the museum for the exhibit, at least for the time being. That's probably for the best, dear.
Danielle shifted in her seat, uncrossing and recrossing her legs. Licking her lips, she looked over at Marie. After yesterday's visit to the museum, and the way they're so cavalier with the truth regarding Walt Marlowe's death, well, I dreamt about him last night.
You dreamt about Walt Marlowe?
Marie's face broke out into a grin.
What was the dream about?
Oh, I don't know. We were sitting in the library together, reading. Yes, we were reading, she lied.
Now that you mention it, I dreamt about Walt Marlowe not that long ago.
You did?
Marie nodded.
Not sure why I dreamt about him. He looked just like he did in his portrait, yet perhaps better looking. I remember Mother telling me he was a handsome man. Such a shame he died at such a young age. It was really an odd dream.
Odd how?
We were in my parents' house, the one Ian lives in, across from you. I was just a baby.
You were a baby in the dream? Danielle asked.
Marie smiled.
Yes and no. I was as I am now, but there was also a baby in the dream, and the baby was me. Walt was there. Actually, two Walt Marlowes.
Two? Marie laughed.
Are you sure you want to hear about an old woman's dream?
Danielle leaned forward and set her teacup and saucer on the coffee table.
Oh, yes. I really do.
Marie laughed again and then continued. It reminded me a little of Dickens' Christmas Carol, where the ghost takes Scrooge back to see his past. In this case, I was Scrooge and Walt was the ghost. My father was there, sitting on the sofa, holding a baby, me, in his arms. I knew it was me. The way they were talking, I could tell it was the first time Walt had seen me. My mother walked into the room and asked Father if he was going to let Walt hold me. Walt's expression was priceless. For a moment, I imagined he was going to leap from the sofa. He told Father, "Babies scare me." Marie laughed.
Then what happened?
I wanted to know why I was there, watching this.
I started asking Walt, the Walt by my side, not the Walt sitting on the sofa with my father, why we were there. And then, well, then I woke up.
Interesting, Danielle murmured.
I suppose I understand the dream. I'd heard that story from both of my parents a dozen times.
What story?
After I was born and Walt Marlowe saw me for the first time, my mother asked him if he wanted to hold me, and he looked appalled at the idea.
Marie laughed again.
He told my parents babies scared him. My mother often wondered how he would have been as a father had he ever had children of his own.
I think he would have been a good father, Danielle murmured.
Do you know what's peculiar? Marie asked.
What?
I normally forget my dreams right after I wake up, but I can still remember this one clearly. Every detail.
Some dreams are like that.
Perhaps. Silly dream, though. not sure what it meant, if anything. Was there some significance to Walt and me making a Dickens-like appearance, showing up in an old story my parents used to tell me? Or had I simply eaten ice cream too late that night? It was lunchtime when Danielle returned to Marlowe House. She found Joanne vacuuming in the parlor. The moment Danielle walked in the room, Joanne turned off the vacuum. "I thought I'd clean up in here while everyone is out," Joanne explained. "So you're alone?" "Except, of course, for Walt and Max." "Yes, and enjoying the solitude. That Mrs. Sterling certainly has a lot to say." Danielle chuckled. "She does. I'll leave you to your solitude. I need to look for something in the attic." "I imagine you'll find Max up there," Joanne said right before she turned the vacuum back on and returned to her work.
"I've been wondering why the chief was here and where you took off to," Walt said when Danielle entered the attic a few minutes later.
"Stella mentioned that when she and her husband were down at the beach looking at the Eva Aphrodite, the police pulled a trunk from the ship, and for some reason she thought there was a body inside, or at least the remains of one."
"Yes, so?"
"She was right, and I think I know who it was." Danielle took a seat on the sofa and looked at Walt, who remained standing by the spotting scope at the window.
"Who?"
"Jack."
"Jack? How would his body get on board?"
"Apparently you were wrong. Jack didn't run off. He was on that boat when all those people were killed. And he was killed too." Shaking his head in disbelief, Walt walked from the window and took a seat next to Danielle on the sofa.
"From what Jack said, he wasn't on the boat when he died. For some reason, his spirit went there. Maybe he can't remember how he died. But wouldn't he remember getting on the boat before he was murdered?" Walt asked.
"Perhaps he was killed somewhere else, brought to the boat in the trunk. The chief speculates he was shot in the chest, since they found a bullet on the bottom of the trunk, right below his rib cage."
"Why are you so sure it's Jack? I'd have to assume that after all this time, all that's left of him are his skeletal remains."
"There was fabric left from his clothes. Blue pinstripe."
"Not so uncommon," Walt noted.
"True, but he was also wearing a ring. A Masonic ring with the initials J.W. Walt let out a low whistle and sat back in the sofa, absorbing all that Danielle was telling him.
"He was killed on the boat."
"Why do you say that?" Danielle asked.
"I just don't see how someone could get a trunk on board, or why they would. It doesn't make sense. We're talking about a cruise where our passengers returned within 24 hours.
"Was there a trunk on board?" Walt considered the question a moment.
"Yes."
"Which probably means Jack was killed on board, like the rest of them. But why was he there?" Danielle asked. Walt stood up and waved his hand, summoning a lit cigar.
"Perhaps he was meeting Thelma there, which would explain why he didn't tell me he was going out on the boat."
"Why would he meet Thelma there? Her husband was on the boat." Walt turned to Danielle and arched his brow.
"If you'll recall, Thelma made it perfectly clear what her intentions were should I join them on the Eva Aphrodite."
"But she asked you about going on a private cruise at a later date." Walt shook his head.
"That was after she asked, in her coy way, if I would be on the Eva Aphrodite when they were. It was pretty clear to me she was more than willing for us to slip away for an illicit rendezvous while her husband was on board. The yacht had plenty of rooms for someone to find a quiet place away from the rest of the crew and passengers for an illicit meeting. And when I turned her down, she focused her attention on Jack."
"Why wouldn't he have told you about going out on the boat that day? Why keep it a secret? After all, you were with him when they took off together."
True, but Jack also knew I didn't approve of mixing that type of pleasure with business. We didn't need that kind of grief should Howard happen upon Jack and his wife, especially on board my boat, where Jack's a partner in the business venture. No, if Jack did something that reckless, he wouldn't have told me. I suppose I should go down and talk to him. With a wave of his hand, the cigar vanished. Walt looked at Danielle with a solemn expression.
Please, tell Jack to come see me. This changes everything. Tell him I want to apologize.
Apologize?
For thinking he took off with that money. I'll be honest, I feel awful about that. All these years imagining he had betrayed our friendship that way. I should have looked into it more.
So what happened to the money? You said it wasn't where he normally kept it hidden.
I don't know, but if he went out on that boat, then he must have moved it like he said. It may still be out there somewhere. Maybe even across the street.
25. Sadie's wet nose persistently nudged Lily's left arm. Sitting in the passenger seat of Ian's car, Lily glanced back at the dog.
No, Sadie, this isn't for you.
The golden retriever stood on the floorboard, squeezed into the narrow space behind Ian's and Lily's seats. Her butt moved with her tail, repetitively bumping the back of Ian's car seat. Sadie wanted what Lily had on her lap, a sack of hamburgers they were bringing home from the local drive-thru.
"Sadie, on the back seat," Ian snapped.
Letting out a defeated whimper, Sadie climbed onto the back seat and lay down, her chin resting on her front paws. She continued to stare forward, looking into the opening between the front seats, her attention focused on what she knew was on Lily's lap. Glancing over at Marlowe House as Ian pulled into his driveway, Lily said,
"Looks like Danny's home. I wonder if I should have asked her if she wanted us to pick her up something."
"She probably ate while she was out," Ian said, as he parked the car and turned off the ignition. When they walked into Ian's house a few moments later, Sadie lost interest in what was in the paper sacks. Instead, she rushed inside, headed for the living room, and started barking. Ian followed his dog into the house and stood by the entrance to the living room. He watched as Sadie stared at the back wall, barking and wagging her tail.
"Sometimes that dog does the craziest things. What does she think she's barking at?"
Lily walked into the living room and set the sacks of food on the coffee table. She watched Sadie, who was now sitting down, her tail wagging as she continued to stare at the blank wall.
"Has she been doing that a lot lately?"
"Just the last couple of days. I wonder, do you think we have mice in the walls or something?"
Still staring at Sadie, Lily shrugged and muttered under her breath, "Or something."
"I'll be right back."
Ian turned and headed for the bathroom, shaking his head while muttering,
"Crazy dog."
Lily walked to Sadie and stood by her side. Staring at the spot holding the dog's attention, Lily reached down and patted Sadie's neck.
"What you see, girl?"
"Hmm?" Lily smiled.
"Is that you, Jack? Have you been hanging out over here?"
When Danielle arrived at the site of the Eva Aphrodite, she was surprised to discover there was no longer a police car parked by the street, nor did there seem to be anyone guarding the area. The wreckage remained taped off, yet one section had come unfastened and flapped flag-like along the sand. Notices to keep off the boat were posted along the lower section of the hull. Those were new. She hadn't seen them the last time she had been to the wreckage site. Standing some 20 feet from the bow, she looked up, searching for Jack along the upper deck. Raising her right hand to her brow, she used it to shade her eyes from the sunshine as she looked for him. A flash of light along a section of remaining railing on the upper deck caught her attention. Focusing on the area, she watched as a faint image of a person began to materialize.
To her surprise, the transparent image was not Jack. It was Thelma Templeton staring down at her. Startled, Danielle gasped and took a step back, her eyes never leaving the ghostly image. In the next moment, Howard Templeton appeared. He stood next to his wife, and then another one appeared, and another. Lined up along the top deck were transparent images of what Danielle imagined were once the passengers and crew of the Eva Aphrodite's last voyage. Motionless, they stared down at her. Just as suddenly as they appeared, they vanished. "Rather unnerving, isn't it?" a voice from behind her asked. Danielle swung around abruptly, coming face to face with Jack. She could feel her heart racing. Taking a deep breath, she asked, "How long have they been here?" Jack shrugged. "They showed up right after the last time I talked to Walt. Is it possible for a ghost to be haunted?" Now standing by Danielle's side, he looked up at the boat. There was no sign of the spirits. "What do you mean?" she asked. "I'm a ghost, right?" Yeah. I don't get your question." Casually tucking his hands into his pants pockets, he stared up at the wreckage as he talked. "Reminded me a little of a picture show. I can remember going to the theater. Sometimes the film would just flicker, and sometimes too much light would come through. Not sure if the film was damaged or the guy in the projection room did something wrong, but that's what they rather remind me of. They just appear like that, all lined up, and then they're gone. They don't say anything, don't even acknowledge me in any way. I have to wonder, can they even see me? Are they really there, in the same way I am?" "So they just sort of appear and then go away?" Jack nodded. "I don't even want to come down here anymore. I know I need to move on, but I'm not really sure how, and I don't think I can."
"Where were you when I first got here?" she asked. "I didn't see you on the beach."
Jack shrugged. "I've been hanging out over at George's house. It's familiar. Plus, over there I have someone I can talk to."
Danielle smiled.
"Sadie?" "Strange how that works. I never had a dog. Figured keeping one as a pet was for old people who wanted company. I understood work dogs, like ones that herd sheep. But as pets? Why?"
Jack shook his head.
"I think I was wrong. Dogs are a hell of a lot smarter than I ever imagined. And better than most people I know."
Danielle laughed.
"Well, I would have to agree with you there. Walt's rather fond of Sadie, too." "Yeah, she told me."
"Walt wants to see you."
"Why? So he can tell me what a disappointment I am as a friend? No thanks."
"I think he wants to apologize."
Jack looked at Danielle with a frown. "Apologize? For what?"
"For thinking the worse of you. For not realizing you'd never steal from him."
"Are you saying Walt now believes me?"
"Jack, were you down here when the police took a trunk off the ship?"
Jack shook his head. "No. As I said, I don't like coming down here. Not since they showed up."
"Have you been able to remember anything about how you died or where you were at the time?"
"No. I remember going to pick up Sally, but that's all I can really remember. It gets all hazy after that."
"Sally was your girlfriend, right?"
"She was a doll I was seeing." "Like you were seeing Thelma Templeton?"
Jack turned to Danielle.
"What about Thelma?"
"I know how she tried to pick up Walt at a speakeasy, and when he declined, you decided to step in."
Jack let out a snort. "I can't believe he told you about that."
"In a manner of speaking," Danielle mumbled.
"Nothing happened between me and Thelma."
"But you left with her."
Jack shrugged. "Yeah, we walked out together. But when we stepped outside, her husband, Howard, was standing there waiting.
She looked surprised to see him. I made some excuse, like I just happened to walk out at the same time, and then I went home. That was the last time I saw her.
So you didn't go on the Eva Aphrodite to see her again?
Jack laughed. With her husband on board? I don't think so. Risky enough seeing a married woman. No reason to be stupid about it. A cuckolded husband won't spend any time behind bars for killing his wife's lover.
So you don't remember anything about getting on the boat that night?
Why do you keep asking me that? I think I'd remember getting on the Eva Aphrodite that night, so it probably wasn't when I was still alive. Not sure why my spirit was sent to that boat. Hell, if I know, maybe God supported Prohibition and wanted to teach me a lesson.
I think you were killed on board the Eva Aphrodite.
Why do you say that?
Because the other day the police found your body, what was left of it. Your skeletal remains were found in a trunk on board the wreckage. It still had your ring. Danielle pointed to his right hand. Your ring was in the trunk with the body, and according to Walt, that trunk was already on board. You were shot. They think in the chest, maybe the stomach. Somewhere lethal. The bullet was also in the trunk.
I was shot. Who would shoot me?
I don't know. That's what I'd like to find out. Taking his hands out of his pockets, he combed his fingers through his hair. I don't know why anyone would want to kill me. Jack, everyone on board the Eva Aphrodite was murdered. Each shot in the head. Their skulls were found scattered around the ship. You were the only one hidden, stuffed in a trunk. 26.
Have you always been able to see people like me?
Jack asked Danielle as they walked back to Marlowe House. Probably, but the first time I was aware of it was when I saw my grandmother at her funeral. I was just a little girl at the time.
How did you end up at Marlowe House? He asked.
When Walt died, his estate went to Catherine O'Malley. Jack stopped walking. He looked at Danielle, who stopped after he did.
Who's Catherine O'Malley?
She was his housekeeper at the time.
Must have been one good housekeeper, Jack snorted.
I think Walt may have felt a little sorry for her. She was an unwed mother and had a young daughter. That daughter married my grandfather's brother. She was my great-aunt by marriage. She left me her estate, which included Marlowe House.
Don't tell me the little girl was Walt's, Jack asked in surprise.
Are you talking about my aunt?
What other little girl was there?
Are you suggesting Walt hired his mistress after she had his illegitimate child and then made her be his housekeeper? Danielle asked incredulously.
It certainly doesn't sound like the Walt I knew. But he did leave his estate to her, and he did jump to the conclusion I stole that money. So maybe he was never the Walt I thought he was.
Danielle started walking. No, Catherine was not his mistress. Walt changed his will after he got married, so...
Walt married? I suppose that shouldn't surprise me, but it does. How many children did he have? I always imagined I'd have children someday.
No children. Walt died just a few years after you, in 1925. He met his wife, and within a year, he was married and murdered.
Jack stopped again. Walt was murdered, too?
Danielle paused and glanced up at Marlowe House. It was only one door down. Yes, by his brother-in-law at Marlowe House. Made it look like a suicide.
Why did he do it? What happened to the wife?
Ian stood at his front window and watched Danielle as she walked up the other side of the street. She had just paused in front of the house next door to Marlowe House.
Lily, I'm not sure that Bluetooth headphone was such a terrific idea for Danielle.
Lily walked over to the window, stood next to Ian, and looked outside.
What do you mean?
It looks like she's walking up the street talking to herself.
Lily peeked behind her and spied Sadie, who was busy attacking the dog bone Ian had given her 5 minutes earlier. Glancing around the room before turning back to the window, Lily smiled to herself. I've a feeling I know who Danny's talking to, and it's no one on the phone. When Danielle reached her front door, Hillary pulled up in front of Marlowe House and parked her car. As Danielle and Jack stepped inside, Walt was waiting for them in the entry. Danielle wanted to go with Walt and Jack and see what they had to say. She was naturally curious. Yet Joanne stepped into the entry as soon as she closed the front door, making it impossible for her to continue her conversation with Jack or to engage in one with Walt. The two spirits disappeared, and a moment later Hillary walked through the front door. Slipping off to the attic to see what the two ghosts were saying proved to be more challenging than Danielle had imagined. She spent the next hour talking to Hillary, who wanted to know everything about Marlowe House's history. By her questions, it was obvious she had already read every online article mentioning Marlowe House, including what Ian had written, yet that didn't stop her from seeking more details. When Hillary finally excused herself and went up to her room, Chris called. Danielle spent the next hour alone in the parlor, talking to Chris on the phone and updating him on all that had happened since their last phone call. Finally off the phone, Danielle stepped out of the parlor and came face to face with Stella, who informed her Roland wasn't feeling well and had gone to their room to lie down. Stella was sure it was food poisoning. "I told him not to eat those fish and chips. Too greasy." Danielle chose not to remind Stella she had also eaten the fish and chips and wasn't sick. She didn't want her surly guest to start pointing her finger at Marlowe House's kitchen. Danielle suspected Roland had feigned illness to get a break from his harpy wife. It was after 9 p.m. on Sunday. Lily had gone up to bed. Roland was asleep in the downstairs bedroom, and Danielle managed to slip away from Stella, who was now watching television alone in the living room. Since Stella had no reason to come upstairs, Danielle decided to take this opportunity to slip up to the attic and see how Jack and Walt's reunion was going. Fortunately, the door to Hillary's room was closed.
"I'm surprised you stayed away so long," Walt greeted Danielle when she came into the attic.
He sat with Jack on the sofa. Each had a thin-lit cigar. Danielle's eyes went immediately to the cigar in Jack's hand.
"You figured out how to do it?"
Jack took a puff and said,
"These really aren't bad. I always preferred cigarettes, but this will do."
"If you weren't already dead, I'd be tempted to lecture you on the dangers of smoking," Danielle said, as she perched herself on one arm of the sofa while waving away the influx of cigar smoke.
"Finally, an advantage to being dead," Jack said cheerfully before taking another puff.
"Have you two figured out what happened to Jack?" Danielle asked.
"The last thing he remembers is going to the motel. Everything else is basically a blur until he remembers being on board the Eva Aphrodite."
"Well, what about the money?" Danielle asked.
"If you're talking about the money Walt thought I stole..." "I apologized for that," Walt reminded Jack. "Fair enough," Jack said with a shrug.
He then addressed his answer to Danielle.
"It has to be where I left it, unless, of course, someone found it."
"And where would that be?" Danielle asked. "According to Walt, he looked for it at the Hemmings' house when you went missing, and it wasn't there."
"Yes, but I moved it. Walt was concerned someone would break into George's place and they'd find my hiding place. I didn't understand why bringing it over here would make any difference."
Walt stood up.
"You always had to argue over everything."
Jack frowned up at Walt.
"It's true. What difference would it have made, here or across the street, as long as it was well hidden?" "Where you put it was the first place a crook would look," Walt said. "Which is why I moved it, to show you I could find an excellent hiding space."
Which was where? Danielle asked.
That's the problem. He can't remember, Walt laughed.
You can't remember? Danielle asked.
Well, that's not entirely...